Coming up on today's program, a Supreme Court ruling, staffing shortages, and spiking costs for farmers. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISA Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. We've got a short report for you first. Thursday morning, the U.S. Supreme Court opened the door for the Trump administration to end temporary protected status for Haiti and Syria. Thousands of TPS-holding Haitians live across Ohio, especially in Springfield. WISO's Catherine Mobley has the report.
An estimated 12 to 15,000 Haitian immigrants live in the Springfield area. Many are here under temporary protected status, a legal way to enter the United States. But now the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled Trump has full authority to end this program.
I expected the Supreme Court to do a better ruling, but unfortunately, this is not the case.
TPS holder Vilas Dorsonville is executive director of Springfield's Haitian Support Center. He believes this ruling amplifies the humanitarian crisis his fellow countrymen are already experiencing.
And the worst thing now is that the employers will terminate workers.
These individuals will also lose their valid Ohio driver's license on July 6th. The Department of Homeland Security maintains conditions in Haiti have improved enough for Haitian citizens to safely return home. Meanwhile, the State Department has issued a Level 4 travel advisory warning Americans to avoid the country due to widespread gang violence, kidnapping, civil unrest, and poor health care infrastructure. Jeff Popoli is the lead attorney who argued before the U.S. Supreme Court justices on behalf of TPS-holding Haitians.
The Supreme Court's decision means that many, many people are going to die violent, needless deaths. That's the thing that's kept me up nights for the past 8 months.
Now many in Springfield fear federal ICE agents will aggressively round up Haitian residents, arrest, and deport them. Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
And coming up later in the program, we've got Veterans Voices and WYSO Youth Radio. Up next, this two-part series from today from the Ohio Newsroom looks at how nurses across the state are pushing for hospitals to adopt mandatory staffing ratios amid overwhelming patient loads. But hospitals and rural providers say it could make things worse. The Ohio Newsroom's Kendall Crawford starts our first report. A warning, this story discusses suicide. Then in part two, the Ohio Newsroom's Sarah Donaldson reports on how a few state lawmakers have introduced bills to address nurse staffing shortages in recent years.
Ron Smith flips through the pages of a scrapbook in the middle of a Dayton living room.
Her high school graduation, senior photos.
Each page documents the life of his daughter, Tristan Kate Smith.
She loved to go canoeing. That was her dog.
In other photos, she's smiling in scrubs.
She was very much a patient advocate. She would question the doctors and, you sure you want to do that? She was a good nurse.
But her profession took a toll. Tristan died by suicide in 2023. Her parents later discovered a letter on her laptop addressing the nursing profession as if it were an abusive partner. She said it left her overwhelmed, juggling too many patients with little breaks. She often called Ron after particularly hard shifts.
She said, "Dad, I'm so tired. I'm so tired that you can almost fall asleep at the stoplight." That is not how you want to treat your nurses.
Ohio University Executive Director of Nursing Char Miller says chronic overwork and understaffing in hospitals has been an issue for years. She says many factors are at play. An aging workforce, lower enrollments in nursing, the stress of the pandemic.
Still occurring, and we're still losing people from the profession because of burnout.
Research shows the more patients a nurse takes on, the more likely those patients are to stay in the hospital longer or die in care. Legislators at the State House have proposed a number of measures to address nurse-to-patient ratios. One proposed Democrat-sponsored bill would assign each hospital unit a mandatory ratio. Another Republican measure would give more authority to direct care nurses in crafting hospital staffing plans. But Miller, the nursing professor, says there's one big roadblock.
I think that the evidence certainly is there and has been there for a while that nurse-patient ratios play a critical role in the quality of our health care. I think we've struggled a bit with, okay, and how do we pay for that?
That's a concern groups like the Ohio Hospital Association have raised. They've lobbied against similar legislation in previous sessions, arguing it reduces flexibility in addressing patient needs. Beth Cluding, chief nursing officer at Hocking Valley Community Hospital in Southeast Ohio, is worried about that too. She says the bill doesn't take into account other non-registered nurse positions that help meet patient demand. And she says these sorts of laws create more administrative burden for hospitals with little resources to spare.
Making any hard and fast rules for a rural hospital is not going to be good. A one size fits all for any you know area region in Ohio or the nation for that matter is just kind of missing the mark.
Ron Smith disagrees. He says understaffing and the resistance to the bill comes down to money. He believes hospitals have prioritized profits over the lives of nurses.
The lawmakers have got to do the right thing. They're going to have to live up to what's going on out here in the world. They can't even bury your head to it for so long.
Similar attempts to add staffing ratios have stalled in Ohio for the last 3 years. Tomorrow, we'll hear more about the legislation and why it isn't moving. For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm Kendall Crawford in Dayton.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow. I'm Erin Gottsacker. Yesterday on the program, we heard about how nurses are pushing for legislative change as staffing shortages put a strain on patient care. A few state lawmakers have introduced bills to address these nurse staffing shortages in recent years. Sarah Donaldson from the Ohio State House News Bureau reports on this session's crop.
For State Representative Brian Lorenz, a Republican from Delaware County, the state's health care crisis isn't a partisan matter. It's a personal one.
I used to see my wife come home, how stressed out she was, how stressed out her friends were.
Lorenz's wife, Sue, was a nurse for decades. He got an even closer look at her workload years ago when their daughters had a 13-week stay in the neonatal intensive care unit.
Nurses are on the front line. You know, they're the eyes and ears of the doctors. They're the ones that have that interaction with the families. They're often the first person that you're going to interact with.
Last fall, Lorenz introduced House Bill 535. Under it, most hospitals would have to convene a hospital-wide committee, with registered nurses serving as the majority of its members. Every 2 years, those committees would draft required nursing staff levels and nurse-to-patient ratios. And hospitals not following them could be subject to state fines.
What it really does is it gives the frontline nurses real decision-making power, which they should have, because here we're making them be in this position of advocate and wear all these different hats, but then they're not having a fair seat at the table, and that's just not equitable.
He says the bill is written to work side by side with Democratic-led legislation that would dictate statewide ratios.
By addressing and having a more realistic staffing ratio, it increases their bandwidth.
Lorenz's bill got its one guaranteed committee hearing in March. But as the end of another session comes quickly, it's unlikely either of the bills will move before December, when all legislation either goes to Governor Mike DeWine or dies. Ohio Nurses Association Executive Director Rick Lucas argues the lack of action comes down to one factor.
Unfortunately, money talks at the State House.
The ONA has lobbied lawmakers on staffing shortage issues for some time.
They are definitely sympathetic, and they definitely recognize that there's a problem. But the problem is the hospital lobby comes in behind us and you know, they're in there greasing the skids against us.
The Ohio Hospital Association did not grant a request for an interview. In an emailed statement, a spokesperson wrote, quote, "Mandated approaches to nurse staffing limit innovation, reduce the flexibility needed to respond to patients' changing care needs, and increase stress on a healthcare system already facing an escalating workforce shortage. Legislators have made some strides on protections for healthcare personnel. Last year, a new anti-violence law went into effect, requiring hospitals to create plans to prevent violence, including by posting notices against aggressive behavior. The proponents of that law included Republicans and Democrats, the ONA and the OHA. But Lucas says the state needs to further regulate certain industries, like hospitals. He says it's a matter of safety.
You wouldn't want to get into an airplane without the government setting safety regulations and letting the Boeing CEO decide what was safe. Or, you know, we're going to be like seeing things like with Alaska Airlines with the door flying off of the plane. Like, that's not what we want to happen, but that's what's happening in the hospital. Like, the door's flying off the plane all the time.
If the bill dies in December, Lorenz says he will, quote, most certainly reintroduce it next year. For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm Sarah Donaldson.
Find more stories from today from the Ohio Newsroom on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. Today on Veterans Voices, Marine Corps veteran and host Zach Sliver takes us to North Dayton, where the community reflects on remembrance and what it means today.
Last week, I spent Flag Day at Point Park in North Dayton, where veterans, neighbors, and community leaders came together for the rededication of the North Dayton Patriots Memorial. Afterwards, I asked people why events like this are still important, and I'd like to share what they told me.
We are thrilled to be here today. I am so honored to represent this neighborhood as a state representative. Andrea White is my name, and I am very grateful because this neighborhood comes together. They have a history of embracing and accepting and lifting up everyone and remembering their history and remembering where they came from, who they came from, and who stood before them and whose shoulders they stand on. And we are honored to be here today to honor these veterans who gave their lives.
My name is Jermaine Sterling. I'm with the Dayton VA Medical Center.
What's one thing you'd like people listening on the radio to take away from today?
Don't forget those that have given everything. I think that sometimes we can look at the challenges of our day-to-day and forget that we are free today because individuals have made the ultimate sacrifice. And it's truly monumental. It's beyond. There is no sacrifice that goes beyond what those have given.
Well, as a veteran, I just want to thank you for everything you do. I go to the Dayton VA, nice. And it's phenomenal. I just appreciate all your guys' hard work.
You know, veteran to veteran, it is truly an honor. I'm just doing it in a different uniform. So I hope one day I can look back and say we've laid down a footprint that really drives home what we do best, and that's take care of veterans.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Michael Blake. This kind of gathering is a real plus for the people, their families that are here, and I believe that, you know, and some of the guys are here too, you know, in spirit. That's the whole importance of it. The crowd's much bigger than I thought it was going to be. And that, but then the monument stays forever, and so that's great.
All right, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure, Daryl Fairchild.
Why is it so important not to forget the people being honored here?
Well, we owe them a great debt of gratitude, and they always say that we live on the shoulders of giants, and particularly around veterans and protecting our freedoms and giving, you know, their lives for the protection of those freedoms. Too often our families who have lost a loved one in service, particularly in this day and age, often do that in isolation. Sometimes our wars are, I mean, they're not like World War II when it felt like the whole community was involved and everyone knew someone who was fighting the war. And so the community coming together really is a symbol to them that they're not alone.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I have one, ma'am. Okay. Thank you.
I'm Jason Hess with a Modern Monument in Beaver Creek.
Why do you think it matters to remember veterans publicly?
Well, service in general. We I've noticed that with each generation, culture changes. You know, I think back to my parents and how involved they were with their church and different organizations and that sort of thing. And now we become a little bit more isolated with this technological age and social media. So I would say it's good for people to gather. It's good for people to remember history and all the people that have contributed to the community that they live in. If you get a good group together and you work hard, you can do something great, because the restoration of this monument was it was a major ordeal, and it took a lot of work, a lot of planning, and I just think it's a great accomplishment. Maybe everyone should pay attention to what they see in their own communities and make an effort to restore those monuments and keep that history alive.
Yeah, thank you so much. You guys did a phenomenal job. The monument looks great, and yeah. I just want to appreciate all your hard work.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Veterans Voices is presented by WrightPath Credit Union. Additional support comes from the Dayton Ombudsman Veterans Transition Team and Montgomery County Veterans Service Commission. Veterans Voices is produced at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices, as is WYSO Youth Radio. We have that for you coming up. Up next, costs are up for everyone these days. Inflation is at a three-year high. That, combined with geopolitical factors like the war in Iran, has affected everything from the price at the gas pump to your grocery bills. And in the tri-state area of Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, family farmers are being hit as well. Danny Viral Martinez with the Ohio Newsroom member station WVXU reports.
Like anywhere else, when you shop at a local farmer's market, you look for the best deal. And it may seem like farmers are competing with each other for your business.
Tomato plants, $5.
Organic tomatoes for $5.50 a pound.
Lettuce comes in two sizes. We have a small for $5, a large for $9.
$4 each.
Kale for $4 a bunch.
Kale, collard, Swiss chard are each $5 a bunch.
But the recent surge in fuel costs has also raised the price of goods. And that has some farmers cutting costs anywhere they can in hopes they don't have to raise prices. Sarah Finney and her husband run Finney Family Farm, a one-acre produce farm in Vivi, Indiana. This year, they paid about $100 more than last year for garlic seeds, the highest annual jump in costs they've seen. And that's not all.
Even things like plastic bags, produce bags, you know, that we have to put things in, and everything has just gone up.
And it's not just seeds and other tools. Soil, a major expense for farmers, has gone up as well. Jim Lowenberg from Running Creek Farm in Mount Healthy, Ohio, helps organize a bulk soil order once a year. Now they've increased to include up to 30 farmers.
By ordering together, we can save on shipping costs. We get some bulk rate discounts rather than buying individual bags. We can get it by the pallet full.
To save on seeds, some farmers trade their own, grown from their crop, rather than buying new. Finney has taken part in this trading and says she saved seeds from last season.
We just saved a bunch of sweet potatoes from last year and started our own sweet potato slips so that we essentially have basically a much less expensive crop. It literally saved us like hundreds of dollars.
This method of saving is called seed growing. Kitty Chase is a specialized seed grower in Florence, Kentucky, and organizes seed trading among farmers across the three states.
The idea being that they were seeds that were grown by the growers, not just like extra from seed packets they had purchased.
Chase says the trading started as an informal email list and spreadsheet. Now, she is slowly working with farmers in the Ohio River Valley to make a business out of local seed growing. Supporting each other on a local scale is not impossible for family farms in Greater Cincinnati. Grant Gardner, agricultural economist at the University of Kentucky, says larger farm supply companies have accumulated a lot of debt, which means prices from national suppliers are not going down.
Any support you can pick up is going to be beneficial, and anything you can do to cut costs even a little bit is going to help that bottom line.
While the economy is not in great shape for them, many local farmers have noticed another silver lining in rising prices. The cost of everything has gone up. Finney sells at the Covington Farmers Market in Northern Kentucky. She's almost doubled her sales compared to last year in just the first month. She doesn't exactly know why, but she can guess.
You know, if produce is this expensive at Kroger, I might as well go try to find it locally. Maybe there's just a shift in, yeah, people wanting cleaner food.
Running Creek Farm sells at the Northside and Hyde Park Farmers Markets in Cincinnati. Lowenberg says he's noticed the same thing.
In general, there's more support for the local food economy. It can be a little more expensive. It doesn't have to be, but it can be.
In Demossville, Kentucky, the cost of blueberries at Bright Star Acres U-Pick Farm is up 50 cents over last year. But even so, people are still coming to pick. On the first day of the season, families of all kinds make their way down the blueberry patches, filling their buckets.
Can I make blueberry cobbler?
Co-owner Vince Lovelace says he's not surprised at the turnout.
If you can raise produce and sell it at an affordable price, good, clean produce, the people, they'll show up and they buy it, whether it's down at the farmer's market or, you know, direct sales off the farm.
Danny Villarreal Martinez, 91.7 WVXU.
We've got Bird Note coming up on WYSO. Up next, school's out for the summer, as you know, and we've been bringing you stories from local high school students. Today in WYSO Youth Radio, we return to Clark County to discover the superpowers of students who say make them who they are.
Hey there, I'm Lee Wade, and you just tuned into WYSO Youth Radio. What if the greatest superpowers weren't flying, invisibility, or super strength, but the everyday abilities that help us survive high school and life? A teen-led group in Clark County called BATS, Bringing Awareness to Students, stopped by WYSO to tell us that in Clark County, superpowers are real.
My name is Kevin Jones, and I am a sophomore at Springfield High School. So, it was my freshman year of high school, and it was the start of the second semester, and right after winter break, when school starts again, it gets boring, and everyone's just ready for summer to begin. That was real for me because although I liked learning, I wasn't focused or following through on a lot of my work, and it was showing through my grades. Obviously, this was a problem that I had to overcome, and one thing that really helped me overcome this was realizing that you have to have dedication over motivation, and not just doing your homework or whatever you need to do when you feel like it, because yes, we all get that big spark of motivation to want to accomplish all of our goals, but what happens when that spark leaves? You have to have that consistency. Everyone has a superpower, and I found mine when I was struggling.
Hi, my name is Nevaeh Horn. I'm a junior at Springfield High School. My superpower is resilience. I do really well with just pushing forward because I know sometimes we can get like really down about ourselves and like it can be really hard to get up and just keep going. But when we keep going, it shows that we can do these hard things and you can keep persevering and pushing through. I think this will make a difference in the community by just showing people that you can do it. You can keep going. Just because you're down in the moment, which I know I can get very down sometimes, it is possible to get to that end goal. You just have to keep pushing. And it can feel really hard and really heavy, but keep pushing just shows how strong you are. And I know everyone is that strong and strong enough to keep going.
My name is Sidoni Lorisella. I am a sophomore at Springfield High School in Springfield, Ohio. I believe my superpower is bravery. I've heard somewhere that bravery isn't the opposite of fear, but fear is the source of bravery. For most of my life, I've struggled with social anxiety, and most of my friends and my younger sibling used to talk for me for most of my younger childhood. I don't think I was afraid of talking to people, just my bravery wasn't very loud. I feel like something I do to help myself with this is putting myself out there, even if it feels uncomfortable. I believe my bravery can help in my community because I'm not afraid to advocate for people who need it. I think I can stand up when it's important to me and use my voice when I believe I can.
My name is Finn Wilson. I am a freshman at Cliff Park High School. My superpower is always being prepared and always having good advice. I think that's a good thing because you can never be too prepared. In situations, you might need something, and it could be anything. Like if you're bored, I always have a book on me. What moment in my life made me realize I had this superpower? When I was always carrying a bunch of stuff in my backpack in elementary school. I always had almost everything. If somebody needs something, like hand sanitizer, I can always have it right there for them. Or if they need something like a pen, I can always have it for them. Or if they're bored, I can always give them a book. Just if they want a hug, I can always give them a hug.
And maybe that's what real superpowers are, showing people they're seen, supported, and never alone. Thank you to BATS for sharing your superpowers with us. And a special thanks to Beth Dixon for helping bring this project to life. WISO Youth Radio is made possible with support from the Ohio Arts Council and is produced right here in the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO.
And we've got one more quick hit from the WISO news team. Two proposed local solar projects appear to be dead as of this past Wednesday. WISO's Adriana Martinez-Smiley has been following these projects for several months and has the details on the update.
The Ohio Power Siting Board denied a request to construct the Sloopy Solar Project in Harmony Township in Clark County. The board pointed to what it called overwhelming public opposition as the reason behind the denial. Sloopy's developer, Invenergy, says in a statement, the company is disappointed by the decision and will evaluate next steps. A local union coalition that was to work on building the solar project says the decision, quote, represents a loss of hundreds of local construction jobs for the community, end quote. In the same meeting, the Power Siting Board also approved a request from the developer of the Champaign County project called Hill Climber Solar to withdraw its application. Hill Climber had been proposed for construction in Urbana Township. In its filing, Hill Climber's developer says it reserves the right to file another application at a later date. That project also faced staunch local opposition. For WISO News, I'm Adriana Martinez-Smiley.
This is Bird Note. As a flock of ducks lift off from a marsh, their wings reveal large patches of powder blue and emerald. These dabbling ducks are called blue-winged teal. They're petite birds, noticeably smaller than mallards. The male's blue-gray head has a bright white crescent at the base of the bill, and his cinnamon sides and underparts are peppered with dark dots. Females are mottled grayish-brown. Blue-winged teal are long-distance migrants, traveling from nesting areas in Canada and the U.S. to South America for the winter. They feed in shallow water, with a preference during the breeding season for snails and fly larvae. In fall and winter, they seek out plant matter, especially seeds. Blue-winged teal pair up during the winter and migrate together in spring to a nesting area, often to where the female was born. There, the female will lay about 10 eggs, which hatch after 3 weeks. Once the eggs hatch, mother and ducklings walk away from the nest area within 24 hours, never to return to their nest again. Within just weeks, the young will be flying and ready to join their parents in their great migration south. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share with friends and family who can download and subscribe wherever they get their podcasts. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise. I'm Jerry Kenny. Join us again next weekend. We've got more highlights, conversations, and features for you then.